The Law and the Gospel. Chapter 9. Righteousness is obedience. There are several other instances of the use of the term under the law. We wish to examine these also, to see if we are justified in our conclusion that the expression is used to denote a state of condemnation. Servants of righteousness. We will first, however, take up Romans 6 where we left off. In the 15th verse, Paul expresses his astonishment that anyone who is a subject of grace should think of again sinning. Then he says, "Know you not that to whom you yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants you are to whom you obey, whether of sin unto death, or of obedience unto righteousness?" Here the idea of service is introduced. If they should yield themselves to sin, they would hereby become its servants. In the two following verses the same idea is expressed. Whereas they were bound by sin, in a bondage that could end only in death, they are now made free, and are the servants of righteousness. But the servants of righteousness, those who keep the law, are free men, for the law itself is a law of liberty, and David is authority for the statement that those who keep the law walk at liberty. Christ also says to his disciples, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free," led by the Spirit into law-keeping. In the book of Galatians the term, under the law, occurs several times, and in such connection as to leave no doubt as to its meaning. We first turn to the 5th chapter and read, "Walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lusts of the flesh." The reader will find the parallel to this in, "But you are not in the flesh, but in the Spirit, if so be that the Spirit of God dwells in you." In the 17th verse the enmity between the flesh and the Spirit of God is stated, "For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary the one to the other, so that you cannot do the things that you would." Compare this with, "The carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, either indeed can be. So then they that are in the flesh cannot please God." Also compare this with the account of the struggles of the convicted sinner, as recorded in the latter part of Romans 7. Now read, "But if you be led by the Spirit, you are not under the law." We have seen that they alone can please God who are led by the Spirit, and here we learn that such are not under the law. Now what is done by those who walk after, or are led by, the Spirit? Paul says that God, sending his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh, and for sin, condemned sin in the flesh, that the righteousness, requirement, of the law might be fulfilled in us, who walk not after the flesh, but after the Spirit. If we fulfill the righteousness of the law, we must conform to its slightest requirement, that is, obey it perfectly. That is what it is to be led by the Spirit. And we have read that those who are led by the Spirit are not under the law. It is very clear, then, that spiritually minded persons, those who keep the law, are not under the law. And so we again arrive at the unavoidable conclusion that those who do not keep the law are under it, the works of the flesh. This may be made still more evident. We have already read that the works of the flesh are the direct opposite of the works of the Spirit. And what are the works of the flesh? Paul answers, "Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murder, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of the which I tell you before, as I have also told you in times past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. These things are all forbidden by the law." For proof, see the law itself, and Christ comments on it in the 5th chapter of Matthew. Now, bearing in mind that doing the works of the flesh make one under the law, we learn that to be under the law one has only to violate it. Again, "The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance." That is what is done by those who are led by the Spirit, and Paul says, "Against such there is no law." The law does not condemn a man who does those things, because he is led by the Spirit, but it is against the things enumerated as the works of the flesh. It condemns the doers of such things. The law made for sinners. In harmony with the above are Paul's words in, "Knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for unholy and profane, for murderers of fathers and murderers of mothers, for manslayers, for whoremongers, for them that defile themselves with mankind, for men-stealers, for liars, for perjured persons, and if there be any other thing that is contrary to sound doctrine." The word "made" in the above text is from KMI, to lay, or place, and the meaning is that the law is not laid or placed against the righteous man, but against the lawless. That is, it does not interfere with the actions of a righteous man, but it comes in direct conflict with a wicked man. That this is the meaning is shown by the preceding argument. Paul says that the end, or object, of the commandment is love. In other words, as has been shown in a previous article, the design of the law is that it should be kept. Now a righteous man is one who keeps the law, fulfills its requirements, and therefore the law has no controversy with him. The man who keeps the law has no fear of it. But some, the apostle says, not having aimed at the law, have turned aside unto vain jangling. Because they have not tried to keep the law, they have got into trouble. He says, "But we know that the law is good, if a man use it lawfully." Can this mean that a man's acts will have any effect on the law to make it either better or worse than it was when it was given? Is the law a good law when it is obeyed, and a bad law when it is disobeyed? By no means. Whatever a man may do, the law remains the same, holy, and just, and good. If a man use it lawfully, that is, if he obeys the law, for that is the only way a law can be used lawfully, it is good to him. It then finds no fault with him. But if a man does not use it lawfully, if he does things that are unlawful, the law is not good to him. It is against him at once. If the law lies against the wicked man, how very natural to speak of man as under it. Dr. Adam Clark, speaking of the moral law in his comments, says, "It was, therefore, not made for the righteous as a restrainer of crimes and an inflictor of punishments. For the righteous avoid sin, and by living to the glory of God, expose not themselves to its censure." This seems to be the mind of the apostle. He does not say that the law was not made for a righteous man, but O-U-K-T-I, it does not lie against a righteous man, because he does not transgress it. But it lies against the wicked, for such, as the apostle mentions, have broken it, and grievously too, and are condemned by it. The word K-T-I, lies, refers to the custom of writing laws on boards, and hanging them up in public places within reach of every man, that they might be read by all. Thus all would see against whom the law lay. In our next chapter we shall consider a passage that brings out more clearly than anything yet noticed the meaning of the term under the law.